Delivering the inaugural address is the first challenge every president confronts. In 1841, William Henry Harrison faced the task with an 8,500-word opus that took an hour and three quarters to deliver on a cold, wet, blustery day. Harrison died of pneumonia 31 days later. George Washington's second inaugural address in 1793 was the shortest, 135 words. It took about 2 minutes to deliver. Most inaugural speeches have been relegated to obscure library files. Some have introduced phrases that define a presidency, as did John F. Kennedy in 1961.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. My fellow citizens of the world, ask not what America will do for you, but what together we can do for the freedom of man.
Other new presidents have defined the core beliefs of their new presidency, as did Ronald Reagan in 1981.
Our government has no power except that granted it by the people. It is time to check and reverse the growth of government, which shows signs of having grown beyond the consent of the governed. It is my intention to curb the size and influence of the federal establishment and to demand recognition of the distinction between the powers granted to the federal government and those reserved to the states or to the people.
Aram Baksham was President Ronald Reagan's director of speech writing from 1981 to 1983, and he's with us here in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Theodore Sorensen worked with John F. Kennedy on the 1961 inaugural address. He's on the phone from his home in Pound Ridge, New York. Good morning, Mr. Sorensen.
Good morning.
Mr. Sorensen, overall, what did you think of President Bush's speech?
I thought it was a fine address. It had moments of real eloquence. It was nonpartisan. It, I think, reached out to a wide audience.
Mr. Bakshian?
If I had to use one word, I would say it was appropriate. It was very fitting to the occasion and to the situation under which he was entering the presidency.
Mr. Bush opens his speech with the gracious words for his predecessor and for his opponent. Then he moves quickly, I think, to paint the big picture, to tell the story. Let's listen.
We have a place, all of us, in a long story, a story we continue, but whose end we will not see. It is a story of a new world that became a friend and liberator of the old. The story of a slave-holding society that became a servant of freedom. The story of a power that went into the world to protect but not possess, to defend but not to conquer. It is the American story, a story of flawed and fallible people united across the generations by grand and enduring ideals.
Mr. Bakshian, what's he doing in this part of the speech?
Unity is one of the big themes, and he's trying to make himself part of a continuity of American tradition, American values, and I think he succeeds. It's a very graciously worded. The writer deserves a great deal of credit, I think.
Because, spoken by a true speechwriter.
Yeah, and I think it also this is one that will stand up well in print. It reads very well, which sometimes is not the case with political rhetoric.
Ted Sorensen?
I think a fine inaugural address ought to express a sense of history, convey a sense of history, and this one did. And that was a very, I thought, good way to do it.
Yeah, it's important, I guess, in some ways, maybe to summarize sort of the history to this point and put yourself in it. I mean, it's interesting in this section to me that what he's saying about this history is that it's a flawed history, it's a work in progress, suggesting perhaps that
right. That's
his place in it. I'm just one of the guys.
The other thing is, while he is not the most polished of speakers, and while he might not have been able to write such a speech himself unassisted, I think he genuinely believes and grasps the content of it, and that he conveyed that in his delivery.
You both talked about the tone of this speech. It's in many ways a spiritual tone, isn't it? And
much more of a sermon than the average inaugural address, it struck me. And I don't mean that dismissively. I thought it was powerful in that respect.
Ted Sorensen, did you get that impression?
Yes, and let me say, I thought the delivery was excellent, and certainly there was no mangling of phrases or pronunciations as people have accused him of in the past.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the other major address he's given that people saw was his acceptance speech at the Republican convention. And there as well, when he sat down and worked on it, he has shown that he can deliver a good speech.
Well, give us some insight on the process. What do speechwriters have to take into account when they're writing a speech for somebody else, particularly one who has a reputation for not handling the language well?
You write in the same way that a playwright doesn't want all of his characters to sound the same. You write something that is comfortable for that and appropriate to that character, or that actor, for that matter's singing style, or that singer's cadence and delivery. It seemed to be his speech. It wasn't. It didn't seem to be reading, you know, something that had just been handed to him.
But that's interesting, isn't it, Ted Sorensen? I mean, when you talk about this soaring prose for a man not noted for that, how do you get the speech and the man to fit like this?
Practice.
Yes.
But I would think that both the speaker and the speech writer, when it comes to an inaugural, must remember that there is no other speech like that. This is a speech not simply to members of the party, such as an acceptance speech at the convention. This is to the whole world, friends and enemies, critics and admirers.
Well, and
people of all different nationalities and religions and skin colors.
And yeah, I think this fits that. This achieved that, to me at least, looking at it and listening to it and watching it.
One section in particular, I think, almost evokes a Democrat, Franklin Roosevelt. Let's listen.
While many of our citizens prosper, others doubt the promise, even the justice of our own country. The ambitions of some Americans are limited by failing schools and hidden prejudice and the circumstances of their birth. And sometimes our differences run so deep, it seems we share a continent, but not a country. We do not accept this, and we will not allow it. Our unity, our union, is a serious work of leaders and citizens in every generation. And this is my solemn pledge. I will work to build a single nation of justice and opportunity.
You think the circumstances of this election created the conditions for a more conciliatory speech?
Yes, and I think he gave one. And even in that short passage, he mentioned justice twice. I noticed in the speech as a whole, he mentioned civility about four times. And what's perhaps most striking was he talked about children in poverty, which neither candidate talked about during the presidential campaign, even though it's one of the most important issues in America.
Yeah, and maybe the divisive nature of the election helps set the stage, because it almost reflected what's dividing the society and what needs to be remedied. And maybe, in a way, it impels President Bush to address the issue in a way I think he would like to anyway. I think he's a very decent man.
One section of the speech was very particular and dealt very particularly with issues.
Together we will reclaim America's schools before ignorance and apathy claim more young lives. We will reform Social Security and Medicare, sparing our children from struggles we have the power to prevent. And we will reduce taxes to recover the momentum of our economy and reward the effort and enterprise of working Americans. We will build our defenses beyond challenge, lest weakness invite challenge. We will confront weapons of mass destruction so that a new century is spared new horrors.
This was almost an insert. I didn't read the text in advance because I wanted to hear the speech as people would be hearing it without having previewed it.
Sure.
And that was the first thing I noted, was this was almost the policy insert. You could almost see the stitch marks where it had been put in. But it was a necessary thing, because he did need to highlight several basic objectives of his administration, which during the campaign he had stressed. And so I think while it did, from a writer's point of view, it stuck out a little bit. It was an appropriate inclusion.
Ted Sorensen, did it strike your ear that way?
No. Had I been consulted, and not surprisingly I was not, I would have advised him to save the legislative agenda for the State of the Union address and to stick to the basic principles and broad themes that otherwise I thought sounded much more appropriate for an inaugural address. There's something a little partisan after such a divided election to going back to the tax cut issue that he made a center theme in his campaign. I think that for uniting the country, the emphasis he put on service, on citizenship, those were more likely themes to unite than to repeat a legislative agenda.
And certainly to the extent the speech is remembered, those are the themes that people will remember, I think, much more than
exactly.
any of the specifics.
And if he set up the spiritual theme in the beginning, he certainly brought it home at the end of the speech.
Americans are generous and strong and decent, not because we believe in ourselves, but because we hold beliefs beyond ourselves. When this spirit of citizenship is missing, no government program can replace it. When this spirit is present, no wrong can stand against it.
Ted Sorensen, is he addressing what he believes may be the single greatest challenge America faces now, that it's not at war, that its economy is in pretty good shape?
My hope is that people will take him at his word when he says we should be citizens, not subjects. That means people must speak out and hold him to his high principles.
I guess, in the end, it set a tone which, if the tone can be preserved, will be good for the country, and it will be good for a Bush administration if he can stick to it.
Ted Sorensen is a partner in the New York law firm of Paul Weiss, Rifkind, Wharton, and Garrelson. Aram Bakshian is editor-in-chief of American Speaker. Thank you both, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.